Good afternoon, brethren. Let's see, can you hear me? There we go. Let's do it again. Happy Sabbath. Well, this week was interesting, to say the least. We had some ice and we had some snow. There were rumors that there was a minor little earthquake, a little shiver in the earth last night. I didn't feel it, but I heard about it on the news when I got up. Well, I didn't get up this morning. I was already up. The weather that we had even put a crimp in this little minor holiday, if you look at the calendar for yesterday. A little religious holiday, or at least for some people it's a religious holiday. And for most people, like so many of our former religious holidays, it's just an excuse for a party of some sort or other. I remember seeing a report Thursday night about one flower shop said that they had 1,200 more roses than they would usually have by late Thursday afternoon in a normal year around Valentine's Day. So if you wanted to buy flowers yesterday, or you know, tomorrow or Monday might be a good day to get them while they're still fresh. It's interesting how times change. I was trolling online looking for, I collect old music, old records from like 100 years ago or more. Found this little cut from a guy named Nat M. Wills, and he recorded this around 1909, and he was talking about his wife's dogs, mostly in a negative fashion. And he was talking about how he would kick the dog. He said one dog was a black and tan. He said, "I wore out two pairs of shoes on that dog, one black, one tan." Then he was talking about this other dog she had that was a dachshund, and he said, "You don't have to kick very high to kick her because she's the lowest dog whatever was." And she said, and he says, "And long," and he was talking about how long this dachshund was. And he says, "Of fleas that live on her south exposure have never seen her head because a very active flea would die of old age before he could complete the trip." Then he says things like, when you let her in the house, you have to hold the door open for her. And if it's a cold day, you'll catch the pneumonia and die of old age and be buried before she's all in the house." And then he says, "The first time I kicked her, it was 2 days before she found it out." And of course, now, you know, they talk about kicking dogs, and that's politically incorrect now. You may have heard about the case with the guy who kicked his Yorkshire Terrier and threw it in the crate and threw it off a third floor balcony, and he's going to do 3 years in prison for that. So things do change, sometimes for the better and sometimes for the worse. We have this little minor holiday that we observed yesterday, and it's the day of love. It's the day to, now its religious aspects have been toned down. It was a Catholic feast day, the Feast of St. Valentine's. There were a number of different St. Valentines, a lot of early Christian and Catholic martyrs known as Valentine. The one you most hear about lived around the late 200s. He was supposedly imprisoned for doing things like performing Christian weddings for Roman soldiers in a time when the emperor had decided that Roman soldiers shouldn't marry because it was not considered conducive for a proper army for the soldiers to be, distracted by the various attributes of marriage. Of course, some historians say that's not true because Emperor Claudius II, when his armies defeated the Goths, he told the soldiers to take as many women as they wanted from among them. So it couldn't have been that. And of course, the St. Valentine's in 1969, the Catholic Church took him off the calendar of saints officially because there's not enough known about him. And of course, to be a saint in the Catholic Church, you have to have performed in your name or on your behalf at least three miracles that can be verified. There's only one they know of for this Saint Valentine, that when he was in jail, supposedly, that he healed the blind daughter of his jailer. And that supposedly led to them accepting Jesus Christ and being baptized. And he supposedly, shortly before his execution, wrote a letter to this young woman and signed it, "Your Valentine." So it was supposed to be the first Valentine. And when you study through the history, there's a pretty good article on Wikipedia with a lot of sources about Valentines. All the traditions and everything you read about when they first got started, you wonder, they say, well, there's always going to be a historian who says it's not really true. In ancient Greece, 400s, ancient Athens, 400s B.C., the first month, which was middle of January to the middle of February, was observed as a time of sacrifice, and it supposedly celebrated the wedding of Zeus to Hera. The month was called Nemalion, which is dedicated to the sacred wedding of Zeus and Hera, the god and goddess of ancient Greece. Rome, it has been connected, although some historians deny it, with something called the Lupercalia, which happened on the 13th to the 15th of February. Lupercus is the wolf, of course, in Rome. You know, you hear about how the legend goes that Rome was founded. There's two twin brothers, Romulus and Remus, who were, their mother was killed by their uncle to preserve his power on the throne. The kids were thrown out in the woods and nurtured and nursed by a she-wolf until they became older. And anyway, they grew to be warriors and men. They went and killed their uncle, and two brothers had a spat, and Romulus killed his brother. I remember reading in one source, the guy said, just think what happened had it been the other way around. What if Romulus had been killed by his brother instead? And we would be reading in histories about the glory that was Greece and the grandeur that was Rheims. I try to say that 3-5 times fast. So in this little holiday of St. Valentine's Day, we read that Pope Gelasius, who was Pope from around 492 to 496, abolished the Lupercalia celebrations and replaced it with something that's supposed to celebrate the purification of Mary, which would be done on February 14th. Some historians say, no, that couldn't have happened because the purification of Mary thing didn't reach Rome until the 600s, long after this pontificate. So everything about this minor holiday is obscure, when it got started, how the symbols got in, how the day got started, how it became associated with romantic love. Some say it was first connected with romantic love when Geoffrey Chaucer wrote a poem in 1382 celebrating the marriage of the King and Queen of England. It's not particularly a real minor day. In England, they say that the country will spend about £1.2 billion a year and send about 100 million Valentines and cards. Even in the 1830s, 10 million cards were sent, Valentine cards were sent in the mail when postage was very expensive at that time. Of course, in this country, there are 200 million cards get sent every year, and they say if you add the school activities with kids doing it, that rises to over a billion cards. It's the biggest day of the year for flower sales, and of course, it's one of the major days for chocolate sales and all this sort of stuff. Now, if you study Roman Catholic saints' days, where they have the saints are revered, people even pray to them to intercede, whatever the saint is supposed to be, whatever his purview is. You know, like if you're traveling, you pray to Saint Christopher to bless your trip and to intercede on your behalf to make sure nothing bad happens to you, etc., etc. This goes back to the ancient Greek practices of demigods, of particular heroes who get, when they die, they become elevated to semi or demigod status. And They said they ended up in the stars, and a constellation gets named for them, and you can intercede, have them intercede for you against, in your favor, against a god who's trying to do you ill or evil, or to fight, you know, for you, or to fight with you against a god trying to do you harm, or you know, intercede and intervene for you with his great strength and power or whatever. There's historical evidence, and of course a lot of it was buried when and discarded in the 1817, early 1900s when they began excavating these Greek temples. Many of the Greek temples were honored to some of these heroes, and they had relics. Sometimes there would be fossil bones from mammoths or dinosaurs or whatever, and said, oh, these were giant bones. These are the bones of the giants, of the heroes, or Hercules or somebody like that. And they would have stored these relics in the temples and build the temple around it, and people would come and see it and worship it, just like they do in the Catholic cathedrals where they have the relics of the saints. In the Greek temples, you don't see it much because the archaeologists would report that they found these collections of odd, old, large, or unusual bones, but they didn't see any significance in them, and they basically threw them out. Some recent historians and archaeologists have now gone back and tried to piece together the significance of these bones in these temples. Valentine's is, of course, now, like so many of the holidays, an excuse for a party. Go to a restaurant, give some chocolates, give a diamond if you can afford it. Go to a restaurant, have a nice meal. This is the first, of course, after New Year's, now we're entering a season with what has basically become party days, party holidays. You got Valentine's, then around the first part of March, you're going to have Mardi Gras before Ash Wednesday, with another excuse for a big party. And then on the 17th of March, we're going to have St. Patrick's Day, which is another excuse to have a big party and drink a lot of beer and get drunk. All the typical Satan's holiday calendar. Of course, the Bible has a lot to say about these things, about the conditions under which we'll live. And let's look at 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 9. And he says, but know this, that in the last days perilous times will come. And in verse 2 he says, for men will be lovers of themselves. Something interesting for the day of love, right? Lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy. And going into verse 3, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. These are the top pleasure holidays coming up in the calendar. Having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. And he says, and from such people, turn away. And then in verse 7, it drops down. He says, they're always learning, never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. Then in verse 8, he talks about Jannes and Jambres resisting Moses and resisting the law of God. And then in verse 9, it goes on and talks about some of the, that their power, that whatever they do will come to nothing, that it'll be fruitless. And let's look at that. Now, of course, we know, because we see it, we go through it every year around the other major holidays like Christmas, Easter, maybe Halloween, New Year's Day. In Jeremiah chapter 10 and Deuteronomy chapter 12, where it talks about don't learn the ways of the heathens and how they worship their gods. Don't worship God that way, because all the things that these people do to their gods, the eternal, your God, hates. He doesn't consider it an honor. He won't recognize it or respect it, even though many of our Protestant friends and their teachers and preachers will tell you that we have conquered those days. We've turned them from their evil pagan roots and turned them to the worship and the glory of of Jesus Christ and of our God. And, of course, we know that God says, don't do that. Let's look at Isaiah. Look at chapter 5, verses 1 to 7, where he talks about, turn to Isaiah chapter 5, and first 7 verses, he talks about God's vineyard, that God was going to plant a vineyard and make it beautiful with the choicest grapes and the finest vines, and he built a tower in it, and he expected it to produce, and it didn't quite live up to his expectations, and he is contemplating, well, maybe I'll dig it up, cut it down, burn it up. In verse 7, it tells us that this vine is Israel. And, of course, we know that in the Church of God that we are now the Israel of God. We're the spiritual Israel. Verse 11 of chapter 5, he says, woe to those who rise early in the morning that they may follow intoxicating drink, who continue until night till wine inflames them. Party all the time, party all day. Verse 12, the harp and the strings, the tambourine and the flute, and wine are in their feasts, but they do not regard the work of the Lord, nor consider the operations of his hands. Verse 13, therefore, my people have gone into captivity because they have no knowledge. This is the worst thing about these holidays, even the minor ones. They hide us and cut us off from the knowledge of God. They can ensnare us so we don't have time to even think about God. Chapter 5 of Isaiah, go down to verse 20. Woe to those who call evil good, good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Verse 21, woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own sight. Verse 22, woe to men mighty at drinking wine. Woe to men valiant for mixing intoxicating drink. Verse 23, who justify the wicked for a bribe and take away justice from the righteous man. If we go in Isaiah to verse 59, chapter 59, verse 1 and 2, you don't have to turn there, but you can if you want. He's, behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened that it cannot save, nor his ear, nor his ear heavy that he cannot hear. Reminds us that God has power. He says, but your iniquities, verse 2, have separated you from your God, and your sins have hidden his face from you so that he will not hear. Verse 3, for your hands are defiled with blood and your fingers with iniquity. Your lips have spoken lies. Your tongue has muttered perversity. And verse 4, no one calls for justice, nor does any plead for truth. They trust in empty words and speak lies. They conceive evil and bring forth iniquity. You may have heard what just happened yesterday on the Day of Love in Utah. Of course, we know that the gay marriage push is on in full force, where states have legalized it and judges are throwing out laws against it in other states, just calling them unconstitutional. Just happened in Virginia. In Utah, last August, I don't know if any of you have seen this. I've heard of the show but never watched it. Don't even know what channel it's on. It's called Sister Wives. It's one of those so-called reality TV shows where the man has four wives, and the show purports to show you how these people are living together and loving each other, raising their 17 kids. They filed suit in Utah, and one court has already ruled in their favor, and a higher court yesterday. The judge basically said that Utah's law against polygamy, or at least parts of it, are unconstitutional. Now, the Utah, which was basically run by the Mormon, the LDS Church, if you know the history of the LDS Church, you know that polygamy was part of their belief structure. It was accepted and even ordered in their church. But in 1894, Utah was finally seeking to be admitted as the 46th state in the Union. And they said, the Congress basically said, well, before you can be admitted as a state, you have to amend your constitution and outlaw polygamy. And they did, as a result of, you know, as a precondition for becoming a state. Well, now this judge has ruled that since cohabitation, you know what that is, that's living together, men and women living together, and 30, 40 years ago in some parts of this state, that would have been called shacking up. Since cohabitation is legal, the judge says, there's nothing to stop these people from living together and do what they want. The only thing is that they should make sure that there's only one marriage license per household. This is what the judge has now said. This may go all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States. And then, of course, I think you're going to see the polygamists, though they're winning this, they're going to say this is not good enough. It doesn't go far enough. Just like the so-called marriage equality. That's what they call it now. They don't want you calling it gay marriage or same-sex marriage. It's now marriage equality. You have to show your love, right? Good and good for evil and evil for good. Times change, traditions change. So this, they're going to say, well, this is not good enough because if I can only have one wife, only one marriage license, then I can't pass down corporate benefits, government benefits, Social Security benefits to all the wives. They're not being treated equal. I can't show my love equally for them. So you're going to see it. Believe me, it's going to happen. Just like it says. Now, of course, we know in John 2, chapter 2, verses 3 and 4, it's a memory verse, we know it. It says, if you say you love God and you don't keep his commandments, that you're a liar and the truth is not in you. For this is the love of God, that you keep his commandments, God's commandments. In Mark chapter 7, of course, one of the, another memory verse thing, the hypocrisy verses where in Mark chapter 7, verse 6 through 8, and Jesus answers the Pharisees and he says, well, did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites? As it is written, this people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. In verse 7, he says, in vain they worship me, teaching his doctrines the commandments of men. And then in verse 9, he says, he said to them, all too well, you reject the commandments of God, that you may keep your traditions. This is what the world is doing with these days. There, these, even though they were formerly religious days, and now in our society where, as Dr. Ost mentioned last week in the sermon, more and more people are saying they're not religious. They don't believe in any God. They don't follow any religion. There's even non-religious churches, as he talked about. So more and more of these holidays are just an excuse for a party. Of course, there are plenty of scriptures in the Bible that warn us, that remind us of, you know, some scriptures that says that if there's no God, if Christ is not risen, then we are of all people most foolish. And he says, then you might as well just accept it. Eat, drink, and marry, for tomorrow you die. Because if there's no God, if Christ is not risen, that's all there is. And so we have this. People look for fulfillment in pleasure and entertainment of any sort, whether it's connected with a holiday or not. We see that these holidays get glommed together. And you have a holiday season. The fall season starts with middle of October, goes through Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's. Now you got another one that starts around Valentine's Day and goes almost up to Easter. It's like another holiday season. Entertain yourselves. Get drunk. Be happy. Have fun. But of course, it's empty. It's not fulfilling. It doesn't answer the, as the society becomes further and further from God, there becomes more and more of a longing, a spiritual longing for some kind of spiritual fulfillment. But people don't know what it is. They don't know how to find it. They seek knowledge but don't have the truth of God, just like we read. So this is the one of the biggest problems that God has with some of these days. There's nothing wrong with love. There's nothing wrong with giving gifts, flowers, chocolate, any of that stuff. There's nothing wrong even with showing your love. But God says that he doesn't want us to do, to use these practices to honor him and to worship him. was looking at some of the traditions, and they were talking about how the symbols, the practices of the English and American St. Valentine's Day have begun replacing some of the traditions from the old love-oriented holidays in other cultures and other traditions. In fact, in India in 2012, a guy named Subhash Chudhan of the Bagrang Dal, one of the Hindu temples, he warned couples that they can't kiss or hug in public places. He says, "Our activists will beat you up." And he said, "We are not against love, but we criticize vulgar exhibition of love at public places." And in some Muslim countries, of course, they see things like Valentine's Day and these public expressions of love and all the things that go with it as cultural perversions and contaminations from the infidel Christian West, even to the point that around February 14th, the religious police go in and make flower shops remove red roses from their displays. And you can't send cards, and you can't do this, and you can't do that. And they say that non-Muslims can practice it if they want, but they have to keep it out of sight, behind closed doors, out of the public eye. So it's controversial in some ways, and most people just ignore it and say, yeah, it matters to God. God cares. He cares about these days, that we don't observe them, that we don't let them come between us and God. And so, of course, we got these more party days coming right up through the Mardi Gras, the St. Patrick's Day, these Catholic Saints Days. And, of course, in the Church of God, beginning in the middle of April, we get our Passover and our Feast of Unleavened Bread that God gave us, while the rest of the world is floundering in the other things, the counterfeits that the other God gave them, that our God rescued us out from. So we should be thankful and glad that God has opened up to us and shown us His truth and His way, and that by His way and His truth, we will have spiritual fulfillment.